Welcome to the Alcohol Free Life podcast, brought to you by thesoberclub.com. I'm Genuinely Grace. This is for you if you've quit the booze or you'd like to, or maybe you're just sober curious. I'll bring you tips and motivation without any judgment, and there'll be inspiration from experts, quitlet authors, and sober heroes. Hey, and welcome to the podcast. How are you doing? So I've had another week in Spain, in the same northwestern corner of Spain where I was before, because I've got this ongoing dental work. Oh God, it's so boring. I mean, the whole thing did save my life, so I should be really grateful. But anyways, now I'm doing all the mop-up stuff and the hardcore sitting in the dentist chair for about, well, I had one stretch that was 4 hours. Seriously, kill me now. But gratitude, absolutely. I get to do this, okay? It was quite an interesting experience because it really was difficult for me one day. But I had to remind myself that I'm in the driving seat, effectively. I am actually in control. I'm choosing to do this. And I think this is something we have to remember when we're stopping drinking. You know, it feels as though we're the victim. It feels as though this is all being done to these terrible feelings, these awful cravings, all of this misery. But it's our choice. We can choose to do this. And when you kind of flip your mindset like that, makes just so much difference. So anyways, I did put a message on Instagram and on Facebook, just sharing my misery. So thank you to everyone who sent me a virtual hug. It was very much appreciated. I mean, everyone hates the goddamn dentist, don't they? Of course they do. But yeah, some of this was a bit hardcore. So thank you for your hugs. They were definitely appreciated. So we've got a fantastic collaborator this week for the podcast. This great range of drinks. So they're called First, but it's spelled F-H-I-R-S-T. So see what you did there. First range of all natural gut-loving sodas. And the reason they're calling them the first of a kind is because they've got probiotic cultures. I mean, it's such a cool idea. So you've actually got a soda, a living soda effectively, packed with 2 billion stable living probiotic cultures. Now that is cool. A whole load of prebiotic fiber and added zinc. And the really good thing is that amongst all of that, they've not added in a whole load of fillers and sweeteners and sugars, because as you know, I wouldn't be recommending it if they were. So it really is a fantastic, great tasting, guilt-free drink. But it's a functional drink, functional soda, because it will help balance the gut microbiome, help with immunity, you know, soda with benefits, as they call it. So they're a great company as well. They donate 1% of their turnover to biodiversity projects. And they look funky, really funky packaging as well. So the brand are first.com. So I'll spell that for you. F-H-I-R-S-T.com. I'll put all this in the show notes. And if you do want to try it out, they've got a discount. So for a month, I think till the end of November, we've got a 20% discount on any of the first drinks. So the discount code is SOBERCLUB20, but the S and the C have got a capital letter. So capital S and a capital C, SOBERCLUB20. And that will give you 20% off all the products. But I'll put all that on the show notes and let me know if you enjoy it. I'd really love to know what you think. Very much looking forward to sharing with you my guest this week. Jonathan, such an interesting character. Oh my goodness. I mean, just what an experience, the journey from darkness to dawn, as it were. I mean, everything is in there, you know, everything, addiction, trauma, health struggles, eating disorders. I mean, just absolutely everything. But wow, the transformation, and really, really incredible. So yeah, looking forward to sharing this interview with you. I just wanted to mention, because I didn't mention it on last week's podcast, the whole Adele thing. Right. The whole Adele thing. I'm sure anyone listening who's in this kind of scene will have seen the posts that the all the stuff around the media about Adele sharing that she her expression was borderline alcoholic. And now she is sober. I think she said she'd been sober for just over 3 months. And her words were, "It's so boring." Please, Adele, please, for God's sake, seriously. She actually said, you know, "Oh, you guys drinking your whiskey, enjoy it, because, you know, I was effective, you know, I miss it and everything's so boring." I feel so sad for her, seriously. Really sad for her, you know, and the empathetic side of me just wants to give her a big hug and say, sweetheart, you're just not keeping your eye on the prize, right? You're not doing the work. You're not focusing on everything you're gaining. It's literally that classic thing of, oh, I've given up alcohol because I've got to. So you're telling your unconscious mind you feel deprived. No, actually, we are the lucky ones, the ones that choose to do this and are able to do this because we're focusing on everything we're gaining. There is nothing to lose and everything to gain. So yes, I have empathy with her. Yes, I wish I could give her a big hug and show her that life is so much better without alcohol. It must be very difficult in her world. I mean, isn't she playing Las Vegas or something? I mean, can you imagine the environment there? It's, you know, it's not going to be easy, but when you first make this decision, it's about so much more than just not drinking. It's about so much more than that. Yes, you don't drink alcohol. You drink other stuff, right? But then you've got to do the work. You've got to focus on changing your mindset. You've got to focus on self-care. You've got to focus on good nutrition. You have to do the work. And over time, you know, benefits are just, well, you've heard me say it 1,000 times. If my only regret is not doing this sooner, if only someone had told me how freaking fantastic life is without the booze much sooner, rather than everyone going, oh dear, poor you. Oh, can't you have one? Oh dear. I mean, absolutely everything needs to be turned on its head in all of this. So anyways, yes, I do feel sorry for her in that respect. But on the other hand, I'm kind of furious because she's absolutely in a massive position of influence, and those comments would have kept a lot of people stuck. You know, if I'd have read that 6 years ago, I'd have thought, oh, you know, well, thank God I'm not that bad and I haven't, in inverted commas, got to stop. And oh, how awful, you know, that she's missing out. It literally kind of just solidifies all those ridiculous stereotypes. And for that, you know, I'm kind of furious. I think it's just really unhelpful. It would have been so much better if she could have holed up and focused on, you know, on her sobriety and focused on getting herself well and in optimum health and taking care of herself and actually starting to like herself. That's going to be what it's about ultimately, isn't it, really? So anyways, that I wrote a blog post called No, 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 Adele. You may have seen that. I just figured I'd throw that in because we haven't mentioned it before. I have got an event coming up, as most of you know, on Sunday in Manchester. I'm speaking at the event organized by Andy Blackman from After Party, a whole bunch of my sober coaches. I'm going to be like a mother hen, actually, because there's four or five guys who did my sober coach training. And it's just so fantastic to see people stepping up and doing this work. And just, it's just amazing because, you know, the amount of people who tell me that they're terrified of speaking in public. In fact, don't they say that public speaking is the number one fear above death? I mean, come on, that's not that bad. I know that's easy for me to say because I've been doing it for years, but people do get really, really nervous of speaking in public. So these guys are doing it. You know, they're showing up. They're all going to give a talk. Michael's going to be there as well from Happy Without the Hooch. So really looking forward to seeing some of you in Manchester on Sunday. And then the next thing that we have coming up is November the 15th, we've got an online session with a leading breathwork expert. She's been sober for a couple of years, and she's a coach, and she is an incredible breathwork expert, Christina Ray. So that's a free Zoom event, but you do have to register for it. So if you go to thesoberclub.com, click on events, we're opening it up to podcast listeners as well. Click on that and I'll interview Christina, and then you can be part of this free breathwork session. And it sounds amazing, the kind of stuff that she does. So really looking forward to that on the evening of November the 15th. And then if you're in Hertfordshire on November the 16th at 7 p.m. in the evening, I'm doing a very special event at a beautiful, beautiful, gorgeous, sacred little roundhouse in Hertfordshire. And it's like a sharing circle. We'll be doing stuff around self-care. We'll be looking at different strategies for self-love. And it will just be lovely, basically. And then we'll end with a yoga nidra relaxation, which is relaxation. and we'll do a chakra balancing relaxation and meditation. So it's going to be a really lovely evening. That's if you can get to Hertfordshire on November the 16th, 7 p.m. in the evening. So if you go to thesoberclub.com, click on events, you'll find all of those things there. I should have mentioned Champneys before that. Champneys, 4th and 5th of November. Champneys in Tring. Still got spaces if you want to join us. It's called Self-Care and Sobriety. Not for any of these events, by the way. It doesn't matter whether you're sober or not. It's never only about drinking, right, Adele? It's about so much more. So it really doesn't matter what stage you're at. Don't you know, worry about that at all. All of that's enough. That's enough promo of events. I hope you can come to some of these. Goes without saying, if you are a Sober Club member, there is so much in our member portal around how lucky we are, so much in our member portal around focusing on the benefits of sobriety, even when it sometimes feels hard. So please check it out if you haven't already. Meanwhile, enjoy this interview. Well, I'm really pleased that my guest is Jonathan Nizol, who has just the most fascinating story. I'm really looking forward to digging into it, Jonathan. I know you're in the States, and it's difficult to know where to start because you've got a lot going on. You've got a lot of stuff in the past, but I'm definitely going to want to talk to you about being an international model and fitness influencer and all the stuff you've done recently in terms of being an entrepreneur. But I guess, you know, mostly what we're really talking about is the journey that you've been on from darkness to dawn, as it says on the info that, you know, I read about you, and how you're now sort of just helping other people, empowering other people with some tools of resilience. So but let's take it right back. Tell us a bit about your story, you know, back in time, as it were.
Well, thank you very much for having me, first of all. It's a pleasure to be here, and I really appreciate what you're doing and the opportunity to come and speak with you. I'm a pretty simple guy. I mean, I grew up in Canada, as I was telling you before we started recording. I'm Canadian, born and raised. I grew up on a farm about 2.5 hours east of Toronto, a 500-acre cattle farm. But it wasn't like a cattle farm like in the traditional sense. We raised show cattle, so they were like our pets. So they had wonderful lives. They were just all always in the pastures. Just like, it wasn't like a processing or that kind of thing. It was, you know, they were just, like I said, like our pets. But it taught me a lot about life and death and hard work and, you know, a lot of life lessons that you learn on the farm. You know, when you don't feel like getting up and a cow's having a calf at, you know, 4 o'clock in the morning in February, yeah, and it's minus 40 out. I mean, you got to get up and go. So I loved it. And plus, you know, growing up in the time that I did, you know, I was completely disconnected electronics wise and my parents refused. Video games were coming up then, but my parents refused to buy them for me. They're like, you have 500 acres, like go outside you know, fall out of a tree or go build something or just do something. So yeah. I'm very thankful that they did that for me. And I've always been very sports obsessed and athletically inclined. And I still play hockey 4 times a week here in Texas. And I love just, you know, the athletic part of it. But, you know, pretty good kid for the most part, just regular upbringing, you know, got into a little bit of trouble, but just nothing too crazy and wasn't maliciously, just probably just because my mind was somewhere else. So, yeah, pretty standard.
So then how did that lead to you becoming doing the things that you did then? I mean, it doesn't sound, it's not an obvious transition, is it, from, you know, being on a farm to being an international model?
No, I mean, there are many steps before that, and kind of the darkness came before the dawn, and even throughout the dawn, there was a lot of darkness, I guess, you know, it's, I don't know, when is the dawn really, but the big turning point for me was the day before my 21st birthday, when my mom, passed away very suddenly and very unexpectedly. And she wasn't sick. She wasn't, and nothing like that. It was just like 1 minute she was there and 1 minute she was gone. And, you know, 21 is a very transformative time for people anyway. And, just learning to come into adulthood, and you might think you have it all figured out at 21, and then you get a little older and you realize how little you knew. And I didn't know how to handle it. I mean, my life as I knew it was pretty much over, and I didn't know how to process it, deal with it on a day-to-day basis. I started to deal with clinical depression and severe anxiety and panic disorder and self-harm and those kinds of things. And they weren't really talked about much then either. And my way of dealing with it, the only thing that I could think of is what had always, kind of helped me out in college and stuff, and that was just drinking. And it was, a good way for everything to kind of disappear for, 15 to 25 beers at a time. And, everything came rushing back, obviously. And that's when the repetitive aspect of alcoholism. And I definitely have a predisposition to addiction. I have a very addictive personality, something that I've worked hard to get in check and to learn about myself and to really just learn how to live with and thrive with, as opposed to let it control me. But yeah, it was just drinking. I mean, that was the only way that I could deal with those feelings and deal with the things that I was, or not even deal with, just distract myself from, because I wasn't dealing with them. So it's yeah, that was really where everything took the big turn, the really big turn.
So take us through then. I'm sorry, I don't know the timeline, but so at what point did you start modeling then, for example? Was that were you still in the throes of addiction when you were doing that work?
I was in the throes of a different addiction. So if I was 21, my mom passed away. Spent about the better part of 4 years being a, non-functioning alcoholic. And I got really lucky because I got very sick with a bad case of acute pancreatitis from drinking. And I had to spend just under a month in the hospital, had to have five blood transfusions, lost 60 pounds in the time that I was in there. And I remember those nights by myself in the hospital ward at 25 and thinking, you're 25, you think you're invincible, you think you have it all figured out. And I was overweight. My body was showing all the signs of it. And then obviously this major sickness. And I remember just how alone I felt and how, I was like, this is what this did to me. And this isn't the answer. But so I came out of the hospital with that, and I was just done with alcohol. That scared me straight. That was the push that I needed. I always say, when I was young, I grew up in an era where my parents spanked me, and it wasn't because they had a bad day and they were just taking it out on their, on their son. It's because I didn't have the mentality of where I would have understood a timeout, and it wouldn't have registered to me. So I was like, okay, that was an adult. Like, I needed an adult spanking. I needed something like that serious, because people were telling me around me, you need to quit, cut down on your drinking, it's becoming a problem, and I was like, yeah, I've got it. All those things. We just kind of push it off and we're like, yeah, whatever. I can stop when I want to. I just choose not to. And that was the wake up call that I needed that stopped the drinking. But I didn't start dealing with the feelings. I didn't put them into check or start to really work on them. So I left the hospital, got into great shape, because now I wanted to learn about our bodies and how great these wonderful gifts we are, how they work, and how, to better take care of them. And I was playing lacrosse, professional lacrosse, and I had a career-ending knee injury. And now I'm 26, and I'm probably working out too much. And that's where I say where other addictions started to, it kind of spiraled. That'll be a constant theme throughout this conversation. And after the knee injury, I thought, maybe I'll try some modeling. My mom was a model in the late 70s, early 80s, and I thought, okay, I'm in decent shape now. Maybe I'll try some modeling. And I did. I went down to a couple agencies in Toronto and had some contract offers, and I started modeling at the age of 26. So I was kind of a late bloomer in that industry, but yeah, and I've been doing it ever since. So I'm coming up on, I think this December will be 15 years that I've been modeling.
Amazing.
So, yeah, then that's where I guess that's why I got the modeling at 26.
Mm-hmm. But I read that along the way, you know, as you say, there's various battles with various other addictions, you know, and issues such as bulimia, which crossed your path, body dysmorphia, perhaps. So how did that intersect with your experience as a model then? Was that body dysmorphia very much connected with the whole modeling industry? You know, what I mean, we know what we read about the modeling industry. Is it really very high pressured in that respect?
Very much so. Yeah, it is very much so high pressured, especially when you're traveling and you're in a new place. My first trip was to South Africa, and you know, you're there and you have to make it work, and this is your career now. And you know, I was still working out like a professional athlete, and I, you know, genetically, I just kind of carry more muscle, and you know, I build muscle easily. And I got there and I thought, okay, I see all these guys in these covers and I have to be big, I have to be, and then I got there and I'm like twice the size of them. And they're like, they're very lean, very cut, but I was just, you know, I kind of stuck out. But it still worked well for me, but I started to get into my own head and I started to compare myself to others and start to think like, okay, if I spend X amount of hours in the gym and my roommate is booking this and this job, well, maybe I need to change what I'm doing and look more like him. You know what I'm saying? And that started to, I started to plant that seed in my head. You know, the industry itself, you know, you're just surrounded by people, and it's comparison is kind of a natural, you know, human instinct. But I started to plant that seed in my own head. And then my second trip was to Miami, came home for 2 weeks to Canada, drove all the way from Toronto to Miami. And so my second day in Miami, story kind of gets a little bit dark here, but my second day in Miami, I'm just to go to a casting to meet with a designer. And he, you know, I was told that he's a big designer. He does underwear and swimwear, which is fine, 'cause I was a, you know, body guy. I do a lot of body stuff. And, but as my agency said, quote, he can be a bit of a creep. So I was like, okay, I mean,
nothing like getting a warning, eh?
Yeah, exactly. And this is like before the Me Too movement too, right? Yeah, so this is just like, you're going to see this guy who's a bit of a creep, but if he likes you, he'll book you. Mm-hmm. So the casting, it was a go see, and it's just, that means it's casting just for one person. And it was at 8:30 at night. It was at his apartment. And, you know, I just gotten there 2 days before. I hadn't even found a place to, like a permanent place to live yet. I'm still in hotels. And, you know, I'm doing, trying out some clothing, and he sexually assaulted me. And I remember, because I've, you know, just throughout my life, in sports and in life and stuff like that, when I was dealing with the passing of my mom and stuff, I had a lot of misplaced anger, and I always looked for a lot of physical altercations. So I know how to handle myself. I know how to defend myself. But when I was in that position and when I was in that moment, I was just so taken aback. And then I thought, okay, now I'm going to beat the crap out of this guy. But then I was like, well, I can't do that because I'll probably get arrested for assault or attempted murder. And I just need to get out of this situation. So I got out of the situation. And about 2 weeks later is when the bulimia started, after that. And I think it was just like, you know, putting another compartment of, you know, mom passed away, let's tuck that away. Being an alcoholic, let's tuck that away. You know, body dysmorphia, let's just tuck that away. Sexual assault, I'm like, okay, let's tuck that away. And all the confusion and feelings that I was feeling about that, you know, frustration, anger, you know, all of like, I wish I would have, and the confusion, all that.
Yeah.
So yeah. And I did it, like, I always say that I call myself what I would say is a functioning bulimic. I know there's no thing of a functioning anything, but I would eat my normal meals throughout the day. And I'm great, as most addicts are, at making sure, you know, everything on the outside looks like
it's completely.
So I would eat all of my meals throughout the day and get my nutrients in. But when I needed that release and I was alone with my feelings, is when I would just get a whole bunch of food.
So sad, honestly.
You hear
these stories, so many. And did you not, was there anybody kind of looking out for you? Anyone that you could share this stuff? You know, I mean, looking back, what could have helped you back then? Is there any support that could have helped you?
I don't know. That's a good question, because I was very insular. I wasn't like, nobody knew this stuff. And I've only recently started talking about the eating disorder and the sexual assault, like recently, like within the last year. I thought
That,
they
I
were,
mean,
these were things that I would take to my grave.
I'm going to say
So.
that's a really interesting part of it, isn't it? That there's probably been some guilt on top of all of that, guilt and shame, so that you've
Of
kept
course,
that
absolutely.
hidden.
Absolutely. And that's why when I first started talking about it, it was like I was unveiling my secrets and shames because I was still feeling shame for it. And that's the thing. I don't know if these things were in place. Like I really appreciate nowadays how, these things are talked about more and people can feel like they can reach out more and more things are available for them. But I don't know if I would have gone down that route because of how I was feeling about it and all those things. So it's really hard to say, but yeah, so then I just started, and that was a better part of 8 years of battling with that. And, like that kind of that cycle of eating all my meals. And then when I needed to not feel my feelings or I was alone with my feelings, then I could have some kind of a release.
And then on
And
the outside, it was that everything looked great. Good looking, a
everything looked
model,
great.
successful, fit. Everything going on, but then
Yeah.
that struggle, that battle inside. Wow. So what changed? What was the turning point?
So I had about four drug addictions as well after that I dealt with because this is a better part of 15 years, the major addiction part of it. Actually, no, 20 years, but 15, yeah, 20 years. And it just came back to like I'd moved finally home. I was, traveling was a distraction for me. So I, moving around, traveling, and then, I picked up a number of drug addictions and I just realized I got to, my mid-30s, and I realized that this plan that I had or this way that I had in dealing with, in air quotes, but not dealing with my problems, it wasn't working. It was making me a shell of a person. I felt like a fraud. I felt like what people saw on the outside and what they thought of me was the complete opposite of what was on the inside and how I felt about myself. And I had enough where, I was thinking about like, this is not the life that my mom would have wanted for me or that I should have for myself or my dad, who's still with us and I'm very close to. This isn't the life that I should be living and something's got to change. So I dropped the stigma that I'd always had about therapy and, it being for wimps and it being for, I'm too macho for therapy. I'm not going to have somebody sit there and judge me. And I was like, I'm going to take all this money I'm spending on drugs and all of these distractions, and I'm going to channel it into therapy. And I'm going to, because there have just been so many signs, dozens of rock bottoms, along the way. And it just finally got to the point where I was like, this isn't working. Like my final addiction was to muscle relaxers, and I was taking 100 muscle relaxers per day, 50,000 milligrams of this muscle relaxing medication called methocarbamol, and 20,000 milligrams of ibuprofen, and it made me immensely sick. But I did that every single day, and I turned to therapy, and I hit it really hard, and I hit it with that same athlete's like determination, working on the farm mentality of, you got to roll your sleeves up, and it's time to go to work. Like we are going, like this is we are going to beat this. And that's when things got really hard because,20
You
years
finally got to
of,
look at it all.
oh, and it came flooding. And I didn't, this is the first time I didn't have a substance or a distraction to numb myself
To numb it
out.
out.
It wasn't, and everything came on at once. So it got dark, it got heavy, but you know what? It's what I needed. I wouldn't change it. And just one day at a time, focusing on the positive. One foot in front of the other. Whatever you want to say, like I just said, this is who I have to be. It's either this way or the other way out, and I'm not taking the other way out. So I'm gonna see this through. So that was really what changed, is my mentality, my own personal mentality, in thinking that I had it all figured out and I could just kind of juggle one addiction and hide it, and like, and then finally saying, no, enough is enough. I need to live a better life. So.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, you've emphasized the strength in that vulnerability, and I guess you had to embrace the vulnerability, didn't you, really, to be able to break through
Big time.
and admit that. Yeah.
Big time. It was panic, man. But it was, and now it's more recently like doing things like this, where it's another step of vulnerability. I mean, it's one thing to have gone through these things and gone through, a couple of like years of therapy and to get to a place, but now I want to like step out of my comfort zone again and I want to share these things with the world. And, but you know what? Every time I do, I think, if I meet somebody like yourself who's doing great things and hearing your, what you talk about and the people you have on, and if my story can help just one person, then hey man, it's all worth it. And it helps me.
Absolutely. Yeah,
And
absolutely. I
and
mean, I
it.
think it really will help people, because there'll definitely be people listening who've got stuff
Yeah.
going on that they're not acknowledging, barely even to themselves.
Yeah.
And it feels like a very lonely place when you're hiding, when you're hiding something,
Oh.
when you're not authentic with who you are. It feels like such a lonely place. So, there are messages here of hope and empowerment, but what would you recommend someone who might be going through, various battles? Where can they start? What can they do practically to start to, even just think about building some resilience? Because ultimately, that's what it comes down to, doesn't it? I mean, I'm guessing that a large part of it is be open to reaching out for support, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. Go speak to a medical professional. I mean, it would be my first thing, and I love, like I said, exactly like what you're doing and how there are these communities where we can, talk to and lean on each other and stuff like that. But I think it is very important as well to speak to a medical professional or speak to somebody who, because maybe you have something going on, like, and you're not diagnosed with anxiety or depression
Absolutely.
or maybe bipolar, so maybe there's something going on, and it's hard to right the ship when you don't know what you're dealing with and what kind of waves are coming at you. So that would be my first thing to do. And honestly, the biggest thing that helped me is, just the day-to-day focusing on the positive. Whereas, and I'm sure you know how exactly how this is, where you feel so alone, it's never, you're never going to live a quote normal life. It's just, you've kind of resigned yourself to this is what, but there's so much positive around us. And if you look at it and like, say my little dog over there, for instance, just sleeping, she's just a little beautiful little thing. And just like that little positive little thing, or just whatever it
It's
is,
just
just
gratitude,
find
isn't it,
something.
really, for what you
It's
do have.
absolute. It is exactly that. It is the gratitude. That is a big thing because it's our own mindsets and turning those around. So those would be the two things I would say that to start with, and to look out and to reach out and follow inspirational people like yourself, and to lean on the community, because that's the thing I love about this community is it's so genuinely supportive, where people are just here without a, what can I get from this person? What can I do? It's just, hey, we've all been through this and we've all battled with the devil. Let's help each other out
Let's be
for no other reason
cheerleaders.
than, for no other reason than let's help our fellow human. Like, and that's a wonderful thing, I think. It's to and the resource, especially nowadays with technology, to use and to connect with.
Yeah, totally. And then, with your work as a, model and a fitness influencer, how has all that influenced your perspective now on your body, on beauty, on fitness, on your self-worth? How has it all kind of shifted and shaped now? Because, as we started off this conversation saying, the pressure in terms of things like modeling, but even if you're not a model, there's still just ridiculous pressure on,
Oh yeah, of
well,
course.
everyone, but certainly young people, to look a certain way. It's bonkers. It's absolutely bonkers. And you
It
have to be
is.
old and wise like me to be able to say that. But I can say that now as a much older person. I can just kind of say, oh my God, if only I'd been kinder to myself, and realized back then that you know, it doesn't matter. And this perfection that people strive for is such nonsense. What we actually need to do is begin to find a way to actually like ourselves just exactly as we are. So what are your thoughts on all of that, having given that you're in a world that's fully focused on looks?
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And, you know, to your point, you know, I'm 41 now, and I look at the way that I was raised and how we were raised, and to look at what kids are inundated with now is just crazy to me. You couldn't give me all the money in the world to go back to being a child right now. So I have so much empathy and, you know, sympathy, and I'm with, you know, hoping these kids can really like keep their head straight. And honestly, the biggest thing that helped me in my profession and in my just acceptance of, you know, is be the best version of yourself. With exactly. All your flaws and all your whatever, like, yes, work hard. Yes, you know, eat, whatever, do those things, but be the best version of yourself. Because the more you try and emulate somebody else, like I was trying to emulate my roommates and whatever, there's already a that person out there.
Yeah.
And what makes you beautiful, and forget about modeling, that's just a job, but what makes you beautiful and makes you, special in the world is there's one of you. Yeah, and only exactly. one of you. So be the best version of you and embrace your flaws. And we all have them. And nobody is in the history of the world has ever been perfect. Nobody in the history of the world will ever be perfect, no matter what it looks like on social media. It's not all that glitters is not gold, but just focus on and be the best version of yourself and do things. Yeah. Give yourself grace where it's due, but also, yeah. you know, like sometimes if you feel like, and I think health is most important too. I don't think I talk to like my clients about this and stuff too. It's like, it's not about becoming a model. That's just a job title. Like somebody who sweeps the sidewalks and whatever. It's about health. And I think just being healthy and whatever healthy looks like. Health, beauty comes in all shapes, colors, sizes, you name it. Let's be healthy and be the best version of yourself and try not to emulate others and be true to yourself. So that's the biggest thing that's helped me in professionally, personally, you name it, I think. And even as a, you know, somebody in their 40s and looking at all this kind of stuff, it's easy to get kind of, like I said, inundated with this stuff myself. And it's like, okay, I got to pull back here. I've got to just like focus on and do my own thing. So
seen some amazing benefits, you know, since you've been living differently, as it were. And I think you, am I right in saying you also are involved in real estate investment? So you've kind of, you're an entrepreneur now as well. And I'm guessing that you would say, like so many people I speak to, you know, who've overcome these battles, you know, they kind of say, oh my God, I can't believe the stuff that I have the energy for now that I don't know that I would have been brave enough to do back then. I'm guessing you feel the same
absolutely.
Way.
Absolutely. It's 100%. I mean, our lives take paths, and then, you know, there's a fork in the road, and we, you know, I'm not an impulsive person, but I'm not afraid to take a risk when it's thought through, and like, and this led to that, led to this. And I would never have imagined that I'd be here and, you know, be doing what I'm doing and have all these opportunities. And yeah, or my body would be working the way that it is, because I mean, when I was 25, I looked like I was 55, and I was going in that direction health-wise. And you're absolutely right. The doors that have opened, and I'm a very big believer in when one door closes, like a career-ending, you know, knee injury, then another one opens. Mm-hmm. And, you know, no matter what happens in your life, whether it's, you know, the loss of a parent, which, you know, still hurts to this day, whatever it is, there's a message. And there's something that is, we need to take from that, and we need to grow, and we need to move forward with, and really to like help shape us into being a better person and to find that message and to really take our time and not just be like, okay, that happened and push it off. No, feel your feelings and grieve or do, you know, whatever it means, but really take time to find that message. And it's, you know, when we make mistakes, because we're all inevitably going to make mistakes. Okay. I made a mistake. Whoops. All right. Well, what's the lesson there?
Yeah. Exactly. It's about that authenticity, isn't it? And that sense of, okay, so I'm not perfect, but I'm who I am, and I'm okay with that, you know. Whereas when we're drinking, when we're caught up in addiction, we never have that feeling of authenticity. So we're always on the back foot. We don't know who we are. We don't know how we feel.
Never.
We're just, it's all, it really is as though we're being controlled by something else. And there's something just so powerful,
Never.
isn't there, about just being able to be authentically who we are. That doesn't mean we're perfect, far from it, but at least we're the,
Huh?
you know, we're real. It's really
Yes.
amazing. Well, I'm just so grateful to you
So
for
true.
sharing your story. It's really inspirational, and I know it will help so many people. So thank you so much
Thank you.
for doing this. I really appreciate it. So tell us where people can find you. Maybe your what's your name on social media, and we can follow you and stuff.
First of all, I just want to say thank you very much for having me. I think, like I said, what you're doing is so wonderful, and I love this community, and the fact that you're genuinely doing this just to help others is wonderful. So I really appreciate being given the opportunity to come and be a part of it.
Thank you.
If anybody wants to contact me, you're very welcome. If anyone wants to contact me on social media, everything, all of my social medias, Instagram, TikTok, and YouTube are all my first and last name, Jonathan Nizel, Nizel for the English and Canadian listeners, and an Nizel for
Yeah,
the Americans.
cool.
Such a weird. And
Great.
then on Facebook, it's Jonathan Nizel Official. But I love
Okay,
connecting
cool.
with people. I love learning from people. I love receiving messages from people. And like I said, learning and just getting that and just also connecting with people in the community and yeah, I just
Yeah.
really
Well,
appreciate
I'll
it.
put that in the show notes as well so we can find you. But thank you so much, Jonathan. It's been just a real pleasure to chat to you. Thank you so much for sharing your story and being so open. And I know it will be really help people. So thank you.
Thank you
Take
again. I
care.
really appreciate it.
Thank you, Jonathan. Really powerful, such powerful stories. We'll put some more info in the show notes. Just a reminder of that discount code for first living sodas, as we're calling them, amazing gut-loving living sodas. You can get 20% off all the products at first.com. It's spelled FHIRST.com. From now until the end of November, and you just need to use the code SOBERCLUB20 to get 20% off. SOBERCLUB20, but capital S, capital C. So again, we'll put that in the show notes. Looking forward to seeing some of you in Manchester, some of you at Champneys, November the 4th and 5th. And don't forget, you have to register if you want to join our online breathwork session and check out events for all the other stuff that's going on. Look forward to seeing you same time next week.
Thank you for listening to the Alcohol Free Life podcast brought to you by The Sober Club. Please rate and review. And if you want support, accountability, and inspiration, and you want to live your best life without the booze, check out thesoberclub.com.